This program was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Hello, and you're welcome to the fourth episode of Street Down Memory Lane, the series where we bring the listener on a walking tour of one of Ireland's oldest and most historical towns, stopping off to speak to some local characters and historians along the way, while also visiting some landmark buildings. In the series, we look back at Youghal of yesterday and compare it to the Youghal of today. We will document the changing face of the town from the 1950s onwards, as we hear how the retail and manufacturing side of the town has evolved, while also looking at the significant cultural change that has taken place in the town. In this episode, our team of adventurers make the trip down from the Mall on Youghal's back street right up to Catherine Street. We will take in some of the sights and sounds of the area and meet some very interesting characters and visit some fascinating buildings along the way. One of our first guests today is Kay Donnelly. She has many memories of Youghal's back street and in particular the town hall, where she put on many a show. I suppose one of your memories, really, a lot of the shows that were produced in the town hall back in the day.
The town hall, as I can remember, or the Mall House as we called it in those days, there was entertainment going on there the whole year round. That's what my memories kind of are of my childhood. Starting at Christmas, there'd be always a Christmas show on there. Of course, Father Barry's, the choir, they were always putting different shows on. It was like a teenage club with Father Barry's putting on. There were either concerts, or he used to put on the Gilbert and Sullivan operettas here. They were really professionally done. You know, when I look back on it and think of it now, we were all kind of 12 to 16 year olds, I suppose, but Father Barry treated us all as professional actors. We had to learn everything off by heart, dancing routines that he used to get the film of. Say, for instance, when we were doing the Gondoliers, when he got the film of it and got Horgan's to put on the film so that we could go and watch the way the Dance of Kashuka and all those things were done, and we had to do all that. And as well as that, the main characters in those operettas, he hired costumes from Cork for them, so they were all properly dressed for the part. Ourselves, of course, we had to make do with a bit of sewing and mending here and there to make up little things. But apart from Father Barry's concert, one of my main memories would have been when I was old enough to go dancing town hall of a Sunday night, and there were Kayleys on there. They were run by Conor na Gaeilge. Now, what we did learn there, apart from the usual other teenage things, what we did learn there, of course, were all the old traditional Irish dances. Danny Douche's band was there. We learned things like the Haymakers Jig, Siege of Venice, the Walls of Limerick, Two-Step, the Three-Hand Reel, all, you know, sorts of things that we weren't learning in school, certainly. There was no traditional Irish dancing. Of course, we had no money in those days. There was no such thing as pocket money, so it was a shilling to go to the Cailí, and you would do anything for the wee. Clean the stairs, clean the oven, clean the toilet, anything. Scrape together the money to go to the town hall. It was the highlight of our week. But then the other things that were on here in the town hall, which we don't have now at all, of course, were there used to be a big horticultural show here. Great place to come when that was on during the year. It would be like in September, probably, when all the produce was available and there were competitions, you know, for the biggest this and the biggest that, and for baking and for knitting and sewing and all those things. Other things then that were held, there were fishes. We had a couple of people here in town that taught Irish traditional Irish dancing, like Molly Willoughby.
Now that you've mentioned the town hall and you brought back some memories, I suppose, for me as well, and I'm talking about late 60s, early 70s, when my mother, to try and calm me down some bit, enrolled me in Mrs. Canary's Irish dance class, which was held upstairs in the town hall. So I suppose the town hall would have a lot of memories for me as well. But I can remember there was big red velvet curtains on the stage of the town hall, and I can often remember Mrs. Canary shouting, "Mary Linehan, get off the curtains," because I used to be swinging off the curtains along the stage. Of course, anybody, I suppose, that would have known me back in the day know that I was full of the joys and banter. But I suppose now, looking at the town hall and where we're coming from, Kay, today it's a very different, I suppose, setup basically inside there, where it's the municipal offices now for the East Cork district. So I'm continuing on my way, moving along down, and I'm down at the lifeboat station. And who do I bump into? Only Patsy Manny, the man himself. How are you, Patsy?
I'm very good, thank you very much.
Today we're in the lifeboat station. What does this mean to you, Patsy? And how important is this really for our area?
Well, to have a lifeboat service in the town is phenomenal. It's anyone could call in it I can't stress it enough. It's so important. If someone is in trouble, we can be there to help them, you know. And the community of Yall have always, down through history, been very, very good to the Yall Lifeboat Station. As everyone knows, we're run on donations from the public, and Yall has always dipped deep into its pockets. So while I have a chance now, I'd like to thank those people.
When did it start here in Yall, Patsy?
Oh, the lifeboat station's well over 100 years. When the lifeboat station years ago, it was just a single building, if you can remember.
I can remember.
It housed a very big boat. We have a totally different building today with a totally different boat. But the ethos is the same. We're all volunteers. The money comes from the public. Back in the days, it used to be the Hickeys, the Murphys, and the Hennessys were heavily involved.
I remember.
That's when I remember as a child. But before that, there was different families. How the lifeboats used to be called, it was by the firing of maroons or rockets. Used to wake everyone up at night. I'm sure you can remember them.
I can remember.
The loud big bangers. Today, it's all a paging system. More people know we launched today because of the social media system. As well in the old days, it was only the local people knew the lifeboat was gone out. And you could wake up in the morning and find the lifeboat has been out during the night and no one knew anything about it.
We all remember growing up, the fire station was where it was in the market square at
yes.
that time. There was a siren up in the toilet.
That's
there.
Right.
And it used to frighten the life out of everyone.
An air raid siren.
Air raid siren. And it was like as if we were going to war. They used to hang the hose off a pole and
That's
drive
right.
the hose.
I
remember the big boat ye had down
yeah.
here and that the lifeboat had down here. It used to go down and kind of oil or kind of...
grease the slipway.
Grease. Yes, yes.
Well, the lifeboat was launched totally different back then. It was on a slipway. There was one pin holding it. So the crew had to get in. They had to start their engines and then they knocked the pin. So as she went down the slips, the engine was running and she hit the water. It could launch with just a bare minimum. The chap of the Hennessy's, he used to be the winchman for recovering it. But it was a big...
Paddy Hennessy,
yeah. Yes. And I think he was the first person to get a 21-year service award from the RNLI. It took a huge amount of people to recover the lifeboat. I remember coming down here as a child, watching them recover the boats. It was a big operation. You can see this elaborate station we have today. They didn't have those facilities. They were tough people.
And how long are you involved in the lifeboat, Patsy?
I'm only here a few years, you know.
How many is a few years now, Patsy?
I'm about 30-something.
There you go. Yeah. And it's only for the likes of the people like you.
But I'm only a very small cog down here. There's some people down here put phenomenal amount of work in.
Yeah.
And they go totally unnoticed.
Well, I suppose it's team effort. Like
it's a team effort.
Is.
There's old photographs.
I know all these. Murphy from Teller Street.
Yeah.
Christy Hennessy, the father.
Yeah.
The Hulk.
Yes.
There's the Hulk. Tony Hickey, I'd say.
Yeah.
Christy Hennessy. Murphy up Cork Hill.
Yeah.
And Richard Hickey.
Richard Hickey.
Now, Patsy.
Yeah, it's
going back
a bit. That
now is going back a bit before my time, I'd say.
Now, that was when they did the big rescue of the Fils des Andes.
There's Christy Hennessy, father, anyway.
Yeah.
And there's Hickey. Yeah.
I think that's a Murphy. But there's one man in that, Jimmy Delaney. I don't know if you can remember.
Okay, him. I do remember Jimmy.
He was on that rescue as well.
Some very, very interesting people in it. You know, people that have long gone and long passed that we owe a lot of debt to. I think I remember the Grace Darling. It's in the 1971, and I think that's the one I remember sliding
there
down.
There's a picture of it going down there.
Yes. And I'm continuing my walk. Who do I bump into? Lucky enough, I meet the man himself, Mr. Ollie Casey. And
hiya, Mary.
How are you, Ollie?
I'm not too bad.
Great to see you this lovely evening.
Good to see you too, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, Ollie, because you've lived here all your life, and I'm sure...
77 years, Mary.
There you go. You don't look a day of it, Ollie.
Born and reared in the Mall.
There you go. So you've seen a lot of changes, Ollie, over the years.
I suppose the main changes is some of the housing. Where Mansion used to be, there are two houses now. Then there was Fleming's Shop, Mike Brennan's, Dan O'Troy's. Number 9, where I was born, which was knocked by and rebuilt by Neil Callaghan, not Messenham. And then there's Egan's, of course, that always was there. And Betty Foley's, Lachlan's. The Shays lived in where I knocked and rebuilt. And we moved to number 4. And then there was Hanson's next side of that. He was an RIC man.
So quite a lot of changes as well, Ollie, I suppose. Especially with the Mall Beach, I remember, because it was my playground. I remember on that wall there in the Mall Beach that we're looking at right now, and it looked like as if it was way higher than what it is now.
Yes, and actually there was, in our time, there was a lot added onto it, about 2 feet.
There you go.
Added onto it. So it's you can look, put your elbows up on the wall now and look over it.
You can.
It used to be full of salmon boats. And of course, the Burton Stores was on the quay there.
That's right, yeah.
And
Slaughterhouse.
Slaughterhouse.
The ladder there in the middle of the mall as well,
and across
where there was holes and there was all blood and everything else going in, and we were swimming inside.
That's
in
right,
it.
Yeah. And of course, there was the mall, the surround of the town hall, then the mall house, as we used to call it. The surround was, there were five gates in the mall, two wide ones,
okay,
and three narrow.
I don't remember that now.
Yeah,
I'd say that was before my time.
Before they knocked the wall,
okay,
and widened the road. The road was very, very narrow at that time.
Yeah.
And of course, it used to trap the water when it was flooding.
Okay.
And it was 3 feet one time in number nine where I was born.
There
three
you go.
Feet of water, you know.
There's a lot of changes at the other opposite side of the street as well, with the town hall. And
of course, the atrium added on here.
Yes.
Miss Harris lived in the town hall. She was actually lived in the town hall.
Okay.
She was a caretaker here.
Another massive change was the fire brigade, and you were involved yourself for many years in the fire brigade.
Yeah.
And the changes there were, I can remember the hose being dried on the pole in the middle
That's
of the market
right,
square
yeah,
when
yeah.
Tommy Murphy
yeah.
and the lads used to come into Moby's after yeah. a call or whatever, and the siren that was up in the toilets
That's right.
there where the tourist office is.
Yeah.
It was a wailing siren.
And originally that was up on top of the town hall, right across the road from my window. And I often slept through it until I joined the brigade.
Well, it went from your window then, Ali, from my window up in Moby
right.
Dicks, and I used to run, I can remember with fright, into my mother and father.
Funny thing about it, where the siren was, there was fear men.
Yeah.
Their toilet
That's
for
right.
the men.
That's
and
right.
And I said they left out the firemen.
Continuing my walk, I'm having a very interesting day. I'm now after bumping into Dorothy Heafy, and I'm still on the mall, as we'd call it. It's great to see Dorothy sitting out here this evening on a lovely evening, relaxing. So tell me, Dorothy, about your memories of the mall.
Well, I didn't grow up in the mall. I grew up in Cork Hill, but I've been a resident in the mall for nearly 40 years. But of course, as a child passing down here, going to school, over the years there's been heaps of changes, and yet it's an area that in many ways has stayed the same. A lot of the neighbours are the same, long-time residents, longer than me. We don't live in each other's pockets, but I'd be proud to say that as neighbours, they have that old way
school.
Of keeping in touch with you, even if they don't
And
see
you know
you.
What, Dorothy, I miss it, I suppose, growing up in the market square and going to school, and this is the way I went to school. We had Lachlan's shop there in the corner for years, as well as other shops like Hurley's up on Friar Street and different areas around.
You did, but in the mall there was very few businesses. Lachlan's
yeah.
shop, as you say, and of course here the undertakers, and I live in the family home. And as an undertaker's, you can imagine it's a place that saw many people come and go. And I suppose in a way it was part of many people's lives
yes.
through death. So it was quite unusual maybe in that way. In particular, I'd imagine a lot of men in town would remember the workshop here, because they would have been going down to the Christian Brothers, which was on Strand Street. The workshop was where they made all the coffins, and the doors would be open, and they could see the coffins being made inside and the men working away inside. They were welcome to look in. And I think it goes back to a time when maybe we were more familiar with death. I think it's a more taboo subject now, and a lot of people don't come in contact with it until they're maybe much older.
The older generation had a different way of looking at death, more so than we do.
They do, and
you know,
people were waked at home, so it wasn't, people would drop into the houses and they would see whoever was there. But also they knew, you know, the coffins were being made, and they'd be handmade, and people would, you know, be buying them. So people were probably in a way more in touch with death back then than they are now.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a good
yeah.
thing or a bad thing.
Looking over at the town hall there now, a lot of changes there.
A lot
as well.
Of changes, yeah. It looks better. Our proximity to the Regal Cinema, our proximity to the main street. Looking across the town hall, we're right across from the beach in town. I mean, there's hardly any other town in the country that has a beach in the centre of the town. I think I'm very lucky, I'm very privileged.
I think so too, and I 100% agree with you. And again, it would be remiss of me not to mention, Dorothy, the great work that you do in the Clock 8, another iconic building in Youghal, and one of the most iconic buildings in the country, really, that everybody's talking about, and the reopening of it. And I know you're very, very involved, and you're very, very good. And I'm not just saying that at what you do, because I've been at a few of the tours that you were involved in. So, like, another iconic building again
it's
by
an
JD's.
Iconic, it is, and it's fabulous to see it open. I volunteered there, simply and purely because I'm honoured to be there and I love the story that's attached there. The opportunity to share anything about the town with even our own residents, not to mention strangers who come in. I mean, I knew nothing much about the history until I learned it for the Clock 8. I really, really have enjoyed people's response to it.
But again, I'm moving along here in the Mall. When we go up here, as I call the Mall Lane, what had we at the corner of that there for a number of years before the hairdressers was there?
It used to be Mrs. Clancy's house when I moved down to the Mall. I live here now in the family home, but when I moved to the Mall first, we lived over on the green shop, the greenhouse there on the corner, which used to be Healy's.
Okay.
And of course, Healy's had two premises. That one there, which used to have a pub downstairs.
Okay.
But they also had the pub and a fishing tackle shop up across the road.
I remember, and Bob Bond's.
On the main
There was two steps down into it.
Yeah,
it was
kind of a black. They had a bar at one side. That's when you went in. They'd sold fishing tackle at the other. You don't have to go back hundreds of years to see change.
In our era, as we'd say, we're going back on our memories and what we remember there. And again, it was brought to my attention about the top of the Mall Lane, as we'd call it there, that my father had a butcher shop up there across from Kevin Power. Now, when I came, it was Moby Dick's I came to, so I wouldn't actually remember the butcher shop there. But there was quite a lot of activity on that street over my lifetime.
You know, I'm very fortunate. I'm 60 years of age, so that's no secret. But my mother is still alive. She's 92, and she has a fantastic memory. She remembers absolutely everything. And I think the one thing I've listened to over the years, and I've often thrown my eyes up to heaven, had to listen to it again, was the amount of shops that were in business in South Main Street.
Yeah.
From butchers, there was bakers, there was
fishmongers.
Everything. Quinn's was there, of course. Yeah,
I remember
the chip
Quinn's.
Shop. Yeah. There was everything in South
Main
Street.
There was a wood shop.
There was a big clothing shop there, Morrison's, you know, where it's now next to Ellen Prim's.
And I'm still walking on my merry way, as we call it, the back street, but lots of our natives and myself, including myself actually, my mother used to kill me, Lord to mercy, for calling it the back street. It's not the back street, it's Catherine Street, Kent Street and onto Strand Street. We're moving along nicely, and who have I here relaxing? Tom, it's great to see you this evening.
And you too, Mary.
Lots of happy memories, Tom, of the Mall area, right, and Strand Street in particular.
Absolutely. I mean, this was just an idyllic place to grow up as a child. As you well know, you were over in the Market Square. It was a community. It was, and there was like so many different families. And there was Slattery's, the Murphy's, the Watkins's, the Kearns's, Horgan's, and McCarthy's across the road from us. We were all one big happy family. We all played together. And during the summer, we were never off the Mall in the summer. From early morning until late at night, our mothers would be pulling us off the Mall. We'd only go home for meals.
That was the way it was. And our playground was the Mall. And our playground was the area all down the, we'll say, the Mall and Market Square and onto Strand Street. I knew the Moynihans. And, you know, everybody just hung out together with the Clancy twins, as we'd have known them, and yourselves, Tom. And they were good old days. We'd bonfires when bonfires were allowed.
Bonfires, 23rd of June.
We wanted to have the biggest bonfire. And the biggest one really was the Mall one.
Oh, it was always the biggest. The whole neighbourhood put in for it.
Yeah.
And I've got a photograph of me somewhere at 15 years of age throwing a big lump of lino onto a bonfire. That was only one night of the year, you know, but there was something to every year. I mean, we were on the Mall, as the concrete, as we used to call it, like on Christmas Day. All the kids would come from not just Strand Street, but everywhere, and play down on the Mall with their toys on Christmas morning. And even if there was snow, we'd be down there.
Yeah, and like, I suppose nowadays, when you think about it, we're going into times where health and safety, and everyone's afraid of doing this, doing that or the other. And I was even saying in my memories, and Tom, you'd remember the building of the new jetty, as I'd call it, the new jetty. My kids go, what new jetty? But it's the new jetty to me,
exactly.
Because there was an older one. And there used to be just pipes going out when they were building it, yeah. And we used to be balancing on the pipes.
They were building the what's now Gaelscoil Coron, used to be the Christian Brothers Primary School. When I was about 5 or 6, they were building that. And we used to use the building site as a playground.
And that was the way it was, and that was what we enjoyed in our times growing up. And you know what, when we look back, every area of the town has a playground that children played in.
Yeah,
there was no such thing as danger, or we never knew about danger, really.
No, we were immortal.
We were.
I mean, we used to jump off the mile wall at high tide.
Yeah.
And I mean, even at low tide, we jump onto the stones.
That's
and that was about like a 15-foot drop.
Yeah.
And then out in Paxes, I used to go down to Gowans quite a lot. And so, you know, we'd be jumping off walls out there.
Yeah.
And you were immortal. Nothing could hurt you.
Nothing could hurt you. And like, you think of wastewater treatment plants, and you think of all the things that happen now and the laws that are brought in with the European Union and that for, we'll say, the likes of the water that you can bathe in. We never knew anything about
not
it.
Not at all, sure. I mean,
you jumped in when the slaughterhouse was there.
And you remember Sean O'Keefe used to keep pigs.
Yes, right.
And once every few months, he'd herd the pigs from his back gate down along the sand up onto the mall. And into a trailer to go to market.
Yeah.
And during the summer, you go for a swim and you pop out your head out of the water. And there was a big lump of pig poo in front of you, and you just wiped it away, and you carried on swimming.
Yeah.
It was part of life, and nobody thought any different.
Walking down along there at the Mel Beach there now, you know, the first Mel Beach, as we'd call it, from the lifeboat station. I remember the wall there, and like you say, you were jumping off 10, 15 feet of a wall. Now you're looking, it's maybe 4 or 5 feet with the build up of sand, and that happens every year. But at the side of the mall, we'd say, facing over, if somebody, when you look over towards the quays, you'd a slaughterhouse, and you had the likes of guts and heads.
Absolutely.
And everything else the holes
along the walls,
that's right,
they're gone, they've been capped in.
Yeah.
But the reason they were there, they were sluices for all the blood to come out the water. And the sand used to be black. It was called the Mad Dock when we were kids. And the sand was black from all the blood.
Yeah.
And we weren't allowed in there.
And there was a ladder. I remember the ladder in the middle of it. And the ladder was, when I think back, maybe 10 foot. And it was and to crawl up that ladder, and you'd be pushing poo, and you'd be pushing everything out of your way, jumping in, and it never bothered us. Just after bumping into Mary Carson, Mary lived on the back street all her life, and as we'd known, Buttermer's Quay, and everyone, and you all knows of Buttermer's Quay, Mary's family would be the Buttermers, and I grew up, I was lucky enough again myself to grow up just down the street from Mary. So Mary, welcome this morning.
Thank you, Mary.
Maybe you have a few memories for us that you can relay about Buttermer's Quay, and I suppose the people that lived in the back street, and you know, back in the day.
I have indeed, Mary. I suppose I'll start at the end of Shambles Lane, Meath Shambles Lane to be correct. My aunt and uncle lived there. It was O'Mahony's house. It was a beautiful old house. And when we were children, they used to have a lovely garden and kept pigs in the back there. And my uncle was a fisherman, and he married into that house. And then the next house was, say, Mangan's, Davy Mangan, the Mangan family, the Buck and all of them. We knew all them. They were all our neighbours. And come along then, we had Mrs. Kehoe's house. I think she was related to Con Kehoe, if I'm not mistaken. She was a spinster. Then we had Irwin's. There was the archway. And we had Irwin's at the Mr. and Mrs. Irwin. Ned Irwin worked in Pasley's Super Value, as we call it now. And you'd come along then, and the next house was Noonan's, Mr. and Mrs. Noonan, and Mr. Shawnee's dad and ma'am. They were lovely, all lovely old neighbours. And then we had Pad and Annie Manny, Morris Manny and Angela and Mary, they lived there. And the next one then was Mr. and Mrs. O'Brien, Tom O'Brien. She was a Cork lady. They'd a bed and breakfast there, in my memory of those houses. The next one then, of course, were the O'Keefes. They were fisher people like ourselves. They lived there, and they were another lovely family. We were very blessed with our neighbours. We'd lovely people. And then we had O'Connor's Pub, Mr. and Mrs. O'Connor, and she was such a nice woman. She'd always give me books to read when I was small. Then you come to the other side of the lane, and it was called Healy's, the Blackwater Hotel. When I was very young, they used to have the British Legion in there, and every Armistice Day in November, Mrs. French, Willie French, they'd all come down, and all the old war veterans, Dan O'Try, Dick White, all of them, they'd come into my mother to borrow hot water to scrub the benches. They were real army trained and clean the tables. And we'd go up, they got a television, and they'd allow me in to see the television. Mr. Ed, the talking horse, I can still remember it. They were great because they'd come out with their medals, and they'd stand outside in the road, and they'd raise the Union Jack. They'd play a song, you know, The Last Post. on that day. I remember that, thinking of it now, there was no troubles then, it just happened, that was it. They were all so old soldiers and old seamen. You'd move along, and the next house was just a tenement at that stage, but it was developed and it was built by Captain Welch. It was a very posh house in our day. It was gorgeous, it was brand new in the 60s. Then there was our house next door, and as you know, Mary, the next was Welch's Hardware. Yep. And then our next neighbours were yourself, your mother and father with the pub and the butcher shop. Go up along there, and there was Perks, and now Perks had a yard. Oh my God, we thought the Perks were outer space, they were Martians, because we'd go to Cork maybe once a year if we were lucky, but the Perks would actually have, Mary, they'd go travelling. They might come back and say they were up in Donegal and Mayo. They could have been in Saudi Arabia to us, it was marvellous. Yeah. And always on New Year's Eve, because they had a Scottish connection, the Perks would come out and they'd have a big display, they'd have a penny farthing bike, I remember, and they'd throw coins, it was the tradition. From Scottish, yeah. Something to do with the Scottish, and they'd have the old tambola and stuff in there. We used to love it. We thought it was so glamorous because it was all lights and glitter and everything. Then you came along and you had the guards' barracks. And I remember all the old guards, Carton Tuan, Sergeant Caesar, Sergeant Guard Stack, the whole, they were all in the, they were all lovely people. And if you were inclined not to go to school, you'd be threatened that they'd be calling to the door for you. Yeah. And then you'd move along and we had the handball alley. And that was great to go into, because there'd be men and women in there. It was great to have a little kiss maybe in the dark in the evening. If you were lucky enough to get a boy. Yeah. No, I never kissed in there, Mary, never. And then we go down the quay, and you'd Buttermer's Quay, my grandmother and grandfather's place. It was great for us because that was our playground as well. And all the kids in the neighbourhood, the Murphys and the Powers and everyone, Eleanor Power, Dick Power's crowd, Mary Manny, we all played down there because my uncle had a building business and he'd loads of sand. So we'd be playing in the sand and we'd be killed because we'd be thrown it all over the place. Yeah. Yeah. And then all the fishermen would come in with their fish at different stages. And I always remember one thing always sticks out in my mind. My grandmother had blue and white tray and she always had a big piece of cold meat cooked in it, and we said to her once, why'd you do that? And then she said, the fishermen will be hungry now when they come in, they might like a little something quick before they go home. People were very generous. Yes. Then they'd look after people and they'd give it.
People were so kind, I suppose, that you could knock on anyone's door at any time of the day or night and help was there for you. Yeah. Which has changed in society nowadays. Everybody knew everybody back in the day, and sometimes now, unfortunately, you know, you mightn't even know your next door neighbour.
Speaking on that now, there was a kind of a vagrant worker in Paddy Connors, and he used to sleep in the floor, and I think of it now, near the old fire where he'd be making. And my mother would send two of us, not one, two of us over every day with his dinner. She used to feel, that was the time, she'd feel sorry for him. And I remember, come straight back, because we didn't know him, you see, if you're not back in so many times, you'll be in trouble, but give the man his dinner and come back. And he said to us one day, would you ever tell your mother the gravy was very weak yesterday?
And I'm now coming towards the back street, as I'd know it growing up. I'm after passing up Moby Dick's, I'm after passing up, we'll say, the New Credit Union, the Barracks as I'd have known them, which would be Tony Flavin's flats. And I'm along, and who am I bumping into here? Only John Cunningham at, I'd know it as the League of the Cross, and so would a lot of people from back in the day, but it's now Cumann na Díonadh. So John, how are you today?
Great altogether, Mary.
Great to see you up here, and we're kind of doing a bit of a show here, so give us your memories of Cumann na Díonadh or the League of the Cross as we'd know it.
Yes.
Us oldies would know it as the League of the Cross.
Eileen and Mikey Roach asked me first to join the Senior Citizens. That was 1965.
Wow.
And I'm still there. They were great times. They used to have a meeting every month there, and they'd have a cup of tea and a chat and a bit of, maybe they'd have a bit of a dance around. So that's how I got involved. But before that, you had Mina Hellacy.
That's right, yeah. Irish dancing.
She used to play for him. And then after Mina finishing up, then Lil Jones took over.
Oh, lovely.
That'd be Joe Jones' sister.
60s now would be a bit back for me, John, but carry on.
You're only a kid. But they were great times, and satisfied, but there's so many people, great people gone in that time. There's so many people gone in that time, like passed on.
Yeah.
It's a lot of years ago, and there was a lot of lovely people at that time as well. It was very, very good. And then they asked me then to continue on, and I did. And I used to go every year with them, and with them all that time, I was still with them.
And it's great to see it. And you know, with Cumann na Díonadh, I suppose we always remember League of the Cross and all that was happening in there. And you know what's great, John? It's still happening in there. It's still a community based.
But it's better to cut.
Of course, of course. And like, as well as that, I suppose when we're walking along here now, you know, CRY were in there for a while as well upstairs, so there's quite a lot of history there. So you remember quite well all the the crack and the coal that used to go on in there.
Well, a lot of the people that were in the senior citizens themselves would entertain you as well, because they'd sing a song, play more organ, whatever.
Yeah.
Give a recitation, etc. So it was a mix. Sometimes you'd be entertained rather than entertaining them.
I get you.
But I remember when I came to Yall first, it was known as the British Legion.
Okay.
The League of the Cross now. That's what it was at him. But it changed over the years then, and of course it got better and they renovated, and there's so many different communities going there now.
A lot of changes down here, and I suppose more recently in the last 6-8 months, we've new supermarket opened down here at Aldi, which was the All Carpet Factory. And again, moving along, we've quite a few businesses opening, I suppose, leaning out from Allen's Quay in that area over towards a beautiful view here as I'm walking to the Ferry Point area. Who do I bump into but the man himself, Mr. Tommy Donnelly. How are you?
Hello there. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad at all. Lovely evening, Tom.
It is. Nice evening to be out.
Nice evening to be out, thank God. Your memories of Yall Carpets of days gone by, and what we're looking at here tonight, we're looking at an Aldi superstore, I suppose, and we're also looking at businesses at the back there. We have a STEM academy for kids with the Legoland, and we also have a yoga and mindfulness area. So this area really has changed, Tom, compared to what you would have remembered with the Carpet Factory.
It has indeed. An actual fact, my own memories of the area generally speaking are very good, because I came in there at a very young age. I was recruited from the local vocational school at that time, 1954, was in Church Street. And they were looking for a tea boy or a gopher or whatever. And there was 4 people started at that time. Now, the ambition at that time, it wasn't the All Carpets at that time. It was known as the Seamless Ex-Minister Carpet Company, which in actual fact was part of an English company, but it was Irish people, John Murray, BLG O'Brien, etc., were starting the initiative. Initially, they had in mind that it would grow to about 30 people. Now, 30 people employed in Yall would be a large number. At that time, back in the early 50s, Seafield was up and running at that time, so textile industry was into town, but 30 people as well was going to be a big thing. It started with 4 people, and it gradually started building up numbers. And within 1 year, they had recruited 30. The one good thing about an actual fact, if it is such, was that there was only one person ever come into Yall that knew anything about weaving carpet. That was Mr. Geoffrey Toft. And he was staying down next to Jim Carr's place. He was staying there, in actual fact. That was his house there. And he was the only man that came in. And he stayed there for quite a while. But gradually, the company started spreading down the quays, started taking over buildings and things like that. Now, Murray Kitchens were down in the corner of the quay at that time.
I suppose Murray Kitchens were down at the very corner, was it, Tom?
Yes.
Down where, what would we have there now? Just the shed area that's left.
What is there now
next
is
Coleman.
Mick Coleman's area, in actual fact. And then you had Tommy Murray, the builder. His place now has been taken over as well. Where the Carpet Factory started was known as Foley's Grain Store. Now, there was only 3 stories on that. And one of the floors had to be cut out because the machinery was much taller than the floor was only about 10 feet high. So they cut out one of the floors and the machinery went in there. But then gradually...
Is that the area now, Tom, where the parking is,
that's
facing out onto the Ferry Point, as we'd call it. So that's the first area.
That was the first area. And then gradually as the... as it expanded, because houses were changing from lino to carpets. Carpets were the new luxury, and it was just taking off. And Yall Carpets, as it became known in the 70s when it went public, was really on the crest of a wave at that time. And it rode out the wave, and it kept expanding. Now, at the same time, it had a sister company, which it formed up in Carricktool for spinning. And they were spinning the yarn for the carpet factory. There was plenty of room there for expansion on that. And the next thing is Yall Carpet started spreading to England and took over companies there. It took over 3 or 4 companies there. It then went to Holland. It also took over Navin carpets and things like that. So the moral of the story at the time was, you know, keep weaving carpet, keep weaving carpet.
I suppose we're looking at Aldi now, basically. Do you know along the area there where we'll say facing, as we would know, where the Brass and Reed Band went? We'd say that area there. What was along the rest of the area where there's new houses built there now?
Well, the...
Coming on to Green's Quay area, I suppose. Yeah.
It was all bought for carpet machinery.
Okay.
And the warehouse...
was in there later on then as well. But that was all y'all carpets at one stage.
It was. Even the grain store was taken over for the carpet warehouse. Okay. And when that wasn't big enough, they built the warehouse in Green's Quay that is now taken over by y'all shipping.
And we also have a number of residential houses that have been built in an area that would have been, I suppose, y'all carpets again.
Well, yes, y'all carpets was all over the place, in actual fact. And then, towards the end of the 70s, the situation started to change. The cost of oil started increasing dramatically on the world market and things like that. And there was a lot of places going tapering back. And y'all carpets, towards the end of the 70s, started to taper back. Eventually, in 1984, y'all carpets, as it was, had to close down. It couldn't compete with the places, and carpets were going out of favour.
The Johnny jump up after Lauren the third. I made straight for the yard where I bumped into Brophy, the big civic guard. Come here to me, bye.
I'm now going to have a group talk with all the lovely people who joined me on my walk down memory lane, just to discuss everything that we've discussed on our trip. Tom, I'll start with you. We had a great old chat there about living down the Mall and our playground.
And was, as I said, it was just the most idyllic, glorious place to grow up. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know that yourself, you grew up in that area as well. But I mean, we didn't just stay rooted to the Mall. I mean, you know, we used the whole of, I hate this term, the back street.
I know.
We used the whole thing. I mean, I remember going up to Green's Quay because there were swings and roundabouts there. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was before they built the warehouse there, and you could stay there happily for hours, just rolling around on the roundabout or swinging on the swings, and that the circus used to be up there as well.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And I actually remember at some stage, and maybe Kay might be able to enlighten me or Tommy on this one as well, or maybe John. Was there fairs as well there, or was there people used to come in selling their wares?
I remember seeing photographs of fairs and things in the Fairfield.
When the Fairfield was there, and when, I mean, Tommy would remember coming in from the country with his father, you know, bringing livestock in for the fairs. And I can remember walking around there with my father, but I'd have been very young and seeing, you know, the pigs and hens and chickens. No. Now, at that time, people used to come down from Cork, you know, and they used to have stalls like with clothes, and they'd have wear and stuff like that. And where that used to be was in Dolphin, not in where the car park is in Dolphin Square, because that was a field.
Yeah.
But up at the corner, there was a forge there at the corner. I think it might have been O'Sullivan's had the forge there. You know where there's three houses built now there, at kind of the back of the pharmacy. That was Dolphin Square going back a long ways. There was a forge there, and all around that area there, the stalls used to be gathered around there.
And were the houses at the opposite side of the road?
They're
were
very
they,
old. They're, I was thinking. Square houses are there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest places in Yall.
Where we'll say Yall Pharmacy is, and up along that area. What exactly was along the front, we'll say at the side of Bertie Dempsey's? What was well, in
that,
along there?
It was actually kind of called the Fairfield at that
area.
Time. In there, because it's in there that they would have the sheep and the cows and whatever they'd have in there, because they were kind of safe. But they also have them out all along the street.
Yeah.
And I think
they have them in Market Square as well, used
to. Well, they wouldn't have livestock in the Market Square.
It was
like
stores.
My memory of the Market Square when I was a child was, you know, the market houses?
Yes.
And the farmers would come in and they'd have their produce inside in those houses.
Okay.
On the wet, you know, on the wet days and that. But when it would be fine then, they'd bring the stuff out onto the square.
Okay.
And they'd have, you know, the potatoes and the bags and the cabbage and the turnips, the carrots and all that. Thriving place, you know, when the market was on there, because as well as the farmers with all their vegetables and that, of course, then you had Murphy's Bakery was there where
That's
people
right.
were able to get the fresh bread.
Yeah.
And then you had four or five pubs around the place where people were able to go for a drink.
I can taste the bread.
I can too.
Coming out of Kevin Powers at about 1 o'clock in the morning.
I can taste it before I go to school. Dave would come over, Dave Welch would come over from Murphy's with a basket of the hot bread, the S-Pan, and the butter would be melting on it before I'd go to school. We always had lovely fresh bread.
Dave used to smoke a pipe then.
That's right.
And the pipe would be going non-stop, like over
That's
the
right.
bread mix.
Yeah.
And there was no such thing as health and safety.
Yeah.
Okay, you remember this as well, and Tommy, and John indeed. The library, the Carnegie Free Library, which later became the Carpet Club.
Social club for y'all carpets, because I remember, and now you mentioned the 84, and like I would have been quite a teenager in 84, but one of the best places in town to go on a Sunday night was the Carpet Club, and everybody that knew everybody or met everybody, it was either in the Carpet Club or the Rugby Club, and they were the two at the time. And then of course you move on to Gigi's and other things, but that was why. But I remember now, and you've brought up the library.
Nellie Maher.
Nellie Maher. And Nellie lived in a tram.
We used to use like the Man House.
Mm-hmm.
That later became the town hall and is now the Man House again. That was our playground. We used to give Nellie Maher an awful time inside in the library. I mean, she was an eccentric,
of
without
course.
A doubt.
Yeah.
But we used to run up and down the stairs and everything. And Ollie Casey's mother, I remember her doing the cleaning in the town hall. We tried to outrun her as well, but I remember I got caught one day. She came in. And I went right up to the top of the house into the toilet. And I stood at the toilet, on the toilet seat for nearly a half an hour, hoping against hope that she wouldn't catch me. But she did.
But look, it was lovely for me, I suppose, to reminisce back with you folks. And thank you all so, so much for giving the time to speak to me on my walkabout. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
The Street Down Memory Lane was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Presented by Mary Linehan Foley. Sound engineer, Paul Daly. Sound engineering and editing, Thomas O'Keefe. Produced by Thomas O'Keefe. Series producer, Angela Kearns. Researcher, Angela Kearns. We would like to sincerely thank all those who took part in this programme for their time and most of all for the memories. A Community Radio Y'all production. All in, all in, all in, I was born.